This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, you may have noticed teachers have been marching down at the state capitol and in the schools. We see T-shirts, Red for Ed, everywhere. This week, however, we're going to actually talk to some real-life teachers who've been involved to varying degrees in this movement and to learn from them to find more about what it's about. The first teacher I have with me is Vico Guerrero, who is a 20-year veteran teacher and was one of the teachers who this week had a one-and-a-half-hour face-to-face meeting with the governor. Welcome to the show, Vico.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, I do want to alert people that what's going here, we on this particular day, we're taping in advance. It is Thursday morning. There is a strike vote that is supposed, the results of which are supposed to be announced this evening. You have stepped out. You've got this taping coincides with a 30-minute break. So we know that you have to return to the classroom. And if all of a sudden Vic is no longer here, you'll know why. So, Vic, what are teachers so upset about?
Well, I think for the most part, we're frustrated as far as what teacher compensation is, as well as student funding or school funding in general. And Arizona, the state itself, has been behind the eight ball for quite a long time. They haven't quite caught up to the national average when it comes to school funding or per pupil funding as well. And then for teacher salary and compensation, we are just lagging way behind. I think the elementary school teacher is ranked 49th, and the middle school teacher, high school teacher, is ranked 48th in the nation. So obviously there's 50 states, so we're at the bottom of the barrel. So it's a lot of frustration on that sense, because we as teachers are trying to educate students, and when we don't have proper funding, it makes it difficult for us to properly educate our populace. So that's basically what we're frustrated about mostly.
The number that we've heard cited in terms of salary as a goal is a 20% raise. If we're 48th or 49th right now, where would that put the state?
I'm not sure exactly as far as number ranks. I do know that if we do get this 20%, we're still below the national average. So that's kind of like a benchmark, that national average piece. But if you look at some of our neighboring states, I know Arizona, compared to, let's say, New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, Nevada, they supersede us. New Mexico's at 59,000, Colorado's 48, Utah 54, Nevada 56.
And what's Arizona?
You see, Arizona's 44,000 on average. And so what's happening is we're losing our teachers to other states, or some teachers or some people who go to college don't even entertain the idea of being a teacher and choosing teaching as a profession. So it's a dire situation. And so when fundraising is, or when school funding is so low on the priority list for politicians and for the state in general, it's going to have a repercussion or a negative consequence on the state of affairs with education.
Now, the governor has said that he's on board with a 20% raise. I wonder if you could react to that.
Well, he's on board. It's interesting, this recent proposal about 20%, 10 for the first year increase, 5% second year, and then 5 the third year to take it to that 20% mark by 2020. But just previous to this, he was trying to dump a very small percentage, 1% 1 year, 1% the second year. So you do the math, that's 2%, all the way jumping up to 20%. So he has the capabilities to meet our needs as far as school funding. And why all of a sudden do we have this proposal, which actually doesn't even meet the criteria of what Arizona Educators United or Save Our Schools is looking for, and what teachers in general are looking for? It's a 20% increase by 2020, and we're not even sure if the revenue is going to be sustainable over that course of time, because everything he's basing his numbers on are on predicted economic growth in the state of Arizona. Unless he has a crystal ball and projects these numbers, I don't know where he's deciding where to get these funds from. So that's the part that most people are frustrated about. It might sound good on paper, but where are you cutting? Are you taking from other critical programs in the state's, funds? to transfer to just only the teachers. And this whole Red for Ed is not just specific in addressing the needs of just the teacher salaries. We're talking about the whole educational system. We're talking about support staff. We're talking about capital funds for infrastructure for our schools. We want this to be a collective effort where everybody involved in education, trying to meet the needs of students, are compensated and the funds are there so we can educate our kids properly.
Okay, Vico, the last thing that I want to know is you were amongst a group of teachers the other day who met face-to-face with the governor. I wonder if you could tell us how that meeting went.
Well, we all were lights at the round table. Ducey came in and pretty much presented his proposal and obviously gave his presentation in its best light. We all knew the numbers. We all went in there understanding it, but we were, again, suspect about where this revenue or this funding is going to come from. So basically he presented it as this is a good first step. It's a market improvement from what he's ever proposed as far as teacher salary increases or school funding increases. And so some people looked at it and kind of chomped on the bit, and some of us were a little skeptical. And that even goes with the fact that, you know, there was a little trust issue, not so much with Ducey, but just with the political arena by itself. How do we know this proposal is not going to pass and it's not going to be yanked or pulled by, let's say, a future politician or even in a repeal process? You know, maybe they can't fund 1 year. Maybe economic growth isn't going to take place in that second or third year. What then? And so that's where we're a little frustrated as far as what his plan is meant. What he says it's going to do sounds pretty good. But what's reality, you know, 2 and 3 years down the road? Will he be able to meet or match that 20% increase he's talking about?
Last question, Vico, and you kind of hinted at this a little bit. He's proposed basically giving you the number 20% that teachers had asked for, not immediately, but over 3 years. And that makes it really not quite 20%, but not bad.
Right.
It seems to me the bigger rub is a lot of it seems to be conditional. Like there's a one-time surplus in the general fund this year, and he's hoping that it will continue. And you wonder, all right, what would happen to this raise if next year that one-time thing doesn't materialize, or the money that's coming from other programs? So here's my question. It seems to me, under those conditions, it kind of boils down to, do you trust him or not? What's your answer to that?
Well, like I said in that meeting, there was an element of, I don't know if you want to say mistrust, but do we have your back or do you have our back? Is your word good? And he pretty much just stated that, you know, he kept emphasizing the fact about economic growth and how there's an upward trend in Arizona State's economy and that he's banking on those funds and that economic growth to take care of this 20% increase by 2020. So, I mean, anybody can be skeptical about those numbers because they haven't come in yet. I mean, these are all projections. And so it's hard to kind of bank on projections and the fact that we want these increases for school funding, but we're not even guaranteed that they'll be there. You know, it's nice to say it, but we have to deal with reality at the same time.
Okay, thank you very much, Vico Guerrero, teacher. You're in the West Side somewhere, aren't you?
Yes, West Side.
Well, I know your students are waking. I appreciate your joining us. We'll be back with two other teachers who have been involved in this Red for Ed and related movements when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're meeting with several teachers today who are in the process of who are very much involved in the issues of that you see down at the Capitol demonstrations, walk-ins, walk-outs potentially, and the like. Beth Lewis was chair of Save Our Schools Arizona. A group of about a half a dozen of you, but according to the study from Don Thacker, who's been here many times talking about it, was an impressive study. By the way, broke all the rules. You know, we sat in here and guffawed all the old politicos of whom I count myself one, saying, well, all that's very nice, but you want 100,000+ signatures. That's somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million. They're, you know, more power to them, but they're never going to do it. But nobody told you it wasn't going to happen. So it did. So it was impressive.
Everybody told us it wasn't going to happen, but we just didn't listen.
Well, that was the conventional, that was a, by any conventional standards, they were all right.
Yeah.
I've been here almost 40 years in the state, and I think the only thing that I could compare that to in terms of direct citizen involvement was the Mecum recall, where they said the same things. It's not doable. The bar is too high. You need either a boatload of money or now they had a lot of paid in there too. In the mix, they had a combination. You were about 99% volunteer. I think you bought a few, paid for a few people to put a cushion on at the end, which may or may not even been necessary. And the other thing I remember about that was impressive was that the rate of valid signatures was way high.
Yeah, 87%.
And you don't get that with paid people. The presumption was the volunteers will be worse. In point of fact, the volunteers were better because they're educated and they're motivated and they knew that invalid signatures wasn't going to help the cause, whereas a paid circulator gets paid and they go home and you only find out afterwards that the signatures aren't good. But anyway, Beth is the chair of Save Our Schools Arizona, is a fifth grade teacher in Tempe, where I sent all of my kids. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I wonder if you could, when we talked on the phone, you described to me a confusing array of groups that are involved in this. And I wonder if you could, quickly run through them, because it boggles the mind.
Sure. I mean, I can see where it would be confusing.
Save Our Schools was your group.
Yeah. So we're Save Our Schools. We're focused on ESA vouchers and protecting our public schools for generations to come.
And just to amplify that, there will be, unless the legislature monkeys with it, a referenda on the ballot to constrain the use of vouchers, which take money out of your public schools.
Right, exactly. So when we turned in those signatures, we were fighting to put Prop 305 to the voters on the November 18 ballot. And like you said, unless the legislature pulls some funny business in the next couple of weeks,
they've thrown everything in the world at this. They fought this in court by trying to find some technicality to throw it out. The ruling at every level of the court was down to the state, up to the state Supreme Court, is no, this was done perfectly. It's on the ballot. And the only way they can pull it off now is to repeal the legislation that you objected to.
Right. And they can absolutely do that. I think the outcry will be fierce from the public, because we know that would be a direct thwarting of Arizonans' ability to vote on an issue that directly impacts their kids and their schools and takes our very scarce public dollars directly out of schools and gives it to private schools.
And furthermore, they could repeal it. It doesn't make the ballot, and then put in something very similar to it.
Right.
Immediately afterwards.
Right. And you were talking with Vico earlier about, you know, a level of distrust for this legislature and this governor. And I think that that's something that, you know, people have woken up to, where we've got a governor who's being controlled by the Koch brothers and other, you know, donors, who their priority is this voucher system. So are we really going to be trusting a legislature and a governor that is backed by people who want to take money out of our public schools? Are we going to trust that their priority is now all of a sudden, because of Red for Ed, to prop up our public schools? I don't think any of us are buying it.
It's very clear that those groups have an agenda to basically replace the public schools with voucher-driven private schools.
Sure. I mean, there's hundreds of billions of dollars throughout the country that could be made with some sort of a voucher program throughout the country.
And I would add, and we're off topic only a little, actually, in that if you followed the series of Republic investigative reports, a lot of those schools are unregulated. They don't hire certified. They hire people for even less than the meager amounts you're making because they cut the standards. No certification, I think, in some cases without even college degrees. And the only people who seem to make a lot of money there are the administrators who happen to be the owners of the schools.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, in Arizona, we have some excellent private schools. And, you know, I am all for parents' ability to choose where they send their children. But we're talking about taxpayer dollars that have little to no accountability in how they're spent. And there's no transparency. These schools don't have to take the same tests that we have to take in our public schools. And they don't have to report how they spend their money. So I don't think any taxpayer in Arizona wants their money going to a system like that.
Well, and that's what they're afraid the voters will tell them, I think, if that initiative stays on the ballot. But we were going through the various groups. So there's the Arizona Education Association.
Sure. Yep.
Shorthand is if there is a, quote, teachers union, that's it.
Yeah. And then there's a newly developed group that is called Arizona Educators United. And
that's
they are the Red for Ed folks.
They're the grassroots folks.
Yeah, exactly. And then we've got the School Boards Association, the Administrators Association, the Parent Teacher Association. And those are a lot of those groups that you're seeing, you know, right now talking about all of these issues.
I wonder, given the issue, kick around a strike vote and whatever, how do you deal with that when you've got all of these groups and it's not clear who's in charge?
I mean, I think we're all staying in our lanes. So AEA and AEU are taking care of the walkout business as they should. And they're doing a fantastic job so far. And we'll see what the verdict is tonight.
Well, tonight being data
when we're
data
recording,
taping,
right.
So, I will ask you to predict that, but that'll be a toughie because at the time people hear this, they'll already know the answer. But we will be back in the think tank, hardly scratched the surface on the subject of education in Arizona. We'll be back in the think tank in just a minute.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are talking in the think tank here with several teachers. A third one to bring in is Cindy Harrison. She's a 30-year educator, currently a high school guidance counselor in Gilbert. But she's also been a counselor at the elementary and middle schools. And if I went through her resume, she's also taught at levels ranging from Head Start, which is pre-kindergarten, to the community college level. So you've pretty much encountered the education system from pretty much beginning to end. Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Well, okay, Governor Ducey says, I want to ask you the question that I ask Vico. Governor Ducey says he's given you 20%, but after the first year, that's content. Well, first of all, it looks like the 9 or 10% this year is based on, well, there's a budget surplus, so we're going to take a little money there. There's also quote unquote savings from it looks like certain medical programs for the indigent, a few other places. But it looks like there is the money there this year if you do that. But after that, the way you put it, it seems to be contingent upon state revenues continue to pour in at a level greater than expected. So bottom line, do you trust him?
Absolutely not. I think there's a couple of things. First of all, we need predictable resources. And what he's proposing isn't predictable from year to year. It is only for teachers. And I think that's really important. In the past, he's given a 1% stipend for teachers, but that's not all educators. And so it's leaving out a significant portion of individuals who work in our district that certainly are impactful for our children and for our communities. And, lastly, I don't think we can trust him because Prop 123, our education governor promised that there would be additional resources.
Let's backtrack. Please explain that. What happened?
With Prop 123?
Yeah, these numbers, people don't remember
right.
the numbers.
So. We educators won a landmark court case saying that the state needed to fund public education. It's part of our Constitution. And instead, there was a proposition that was put to the voters to kind of create a compromise, and it narrowly passed. But unfortunately, from that time period, our education governor has opted not to fully fund or make any headway into funding public education.
No, Prop 123 created a dedicated revenue source, and it also said you can't offset, you can't pilfer that, you can't cut other funding because of this new revenue. And then between the governor and the legislature, at some point in the 2010-ish period, they said, oops, the money isn't there. We're just not going to do it, notwithstanding what the initiative passed by the people had said. It went to court. In every court that it went before, the court says, you have to pay up. This is very clear. And then there was a negotiated settlement. Basically 70 cents on the dollar. But even that is not coming out of revenues. That came out of pilfering funds out of the state land trust at a rapid rate. That's like you have a piggy bank and you're taking interest out every year. All of a sudden, we're taking out at a higher rate, which means there's less over the long haul. That's simple arithmetic. And then a year or so after that, the courts rule that that action is illegal, that there were constitutional provisions which have since been changed with Congress. But all the extra money that you took out, you can't do it. And it's by the way, the courts haven't come back and said, yeah, what do you got to do? Do you have to pay that back? In which case, there's going to be another $300 million deficit that the state has basically robbed the piggy bank too early. It's OK prospectively. This gets complicated because Senator McCain changed the rule and said, OK, it's all right to do that, but didn't make it retroactive. So for a couple of years, they took out, I think it was about 300 and some odd million dollars. And I know this gets complicated. Sorry about that. But they took out $300 million that the court said, nope, that was illegal to do. So they may have to pay that back. And I wonder whose money that's going to come out of. Probably not prisons.
No, nope, that's a $1 million question from that.
Well, it's a $300 million question. So when I look at this and it says, well, we're hoping we're going to get extra revenue streams, I think of, there's nothing else in government that's contingent on extra revenue coming in, is there? I mean, versus everything else is budgeted, hard-coded, budgeted.
Mm-hmm. So correct.
So this does seem iffy. The power, I think, of what he did, the power of the statement is the movement says we want 20%, and Ducey was able to come in and say, oh, we're going to give you your 20, which was an interesting scenario because he was in this studio one day saying, nope, 1%, that's it. 24 hours later, he's bumped his 1% to 20.
Mm-hmm. And Mike, I'm going to interrupt you because the Red for Ed movement said 20% across the board. Mm-hmm. What I'm hearing is 20%. And it's not, it's only for classroom teachers. So there's a lot of teachers out there that still wouldn't even see that 20%. Reading specialists, for example, may not see that 20%. Hmm. There's also been some discussion that districts may be able to take those funds and place them wherever needed. Our legislators are also talking about taking capital funding for that 20%. So they're not meeting the needs of what we're asking for. It's leaving out too many different requests that we need in order to make education successful in the state.
Beth and Cindy, I wonder if you could talk to me about the other, quote, other monies for education. For you mentioned capital or maintenance or whatever. It's easy to understand the salary issue. Okay, you say Arizona teachers are making average 44,000. It's this much in this state, this much in this state. We're number 48, 49. That's easy to understand. What I think is harder to get a fix on is talk to me about the other monies. Is there excess in any of those places that money can be taken from?
Right. So, I mean, like any budget, you know, there are a lot of buckets to fill. Running our public school system is no small task. But Governor Ducey is obviously writing checks that he can't cash at this point. You know, the extra 10% that he's talking about are, you know, election year promises that don't need to come to fruition and nobody can hold him accountable for. I mean, he legally cannot even bind future legislatures to do anything. So it's obviously just this goal and promise based on rosy projections that don't match the JLBC report that was just released recently.
If I could, I wanted to focus to rephrase my question because I don't think that you are actually in the schools. When it's very easy for somebody to say, oh, take it out of capital, take it out of this, take it out of that. You are actually in the schools day by day. Tell me what you see. Are there pockets of excess? Are there places where money could come from, or is that stretched to the limit as well? I'm saying, what would the implications of taking money from some other pile?
Yeah, the answer to your question is no. There is no money to be given. We have so many schools that don't have fully operational air conditioning units. We go till June where there's 110 degree temperatures. We don't have adequate technology or textbooks. I mean, our schools are in absolute crisis mode. I have 34 fifth graders shoved into my classroom, and that's typical across my entire school. I cannot meet the needs of all of my students
You've been teaching 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 34 in your class. What was it when you started?
24. So, and it was so much easier. And I don't mean easier like the workload. I mean, I could meet the needs of my kids. I could talk to each of them on an individual basis every day. I have kids whose lives are informed by childhood poverty and who don't eat at night and who don't have parents who necessarily can be there for them in the way that they want to be. And I don't have the opportunity to have those conversations and to provide that support. It's pretty criminal what we're doing to kids. My son goes to my school and there are 31 kindergartners in his class. 31 kindergartners. And we don't even have the money for an aide to help that teacher. I understand that budgeting is really tough. But at this point, if you look at all of those buckets, they're horrifically underfunded compared to other states. And there is absolutely no way that we can take any money from any education buckets.
So there's nothing there.
No, our administrative costs are low, too.
Your thoughts on that?
You know, I remember years ago, because this is my 24th year in Arizona, we used to have some different funding, let's say, for our utilities than we do today. So I remember, and I can't tell you the exact year, but there were some changes. So all of a sudden we went around and we took out light bulbs from every other light. And we, you know, made all kinds of concessions to try and make up for the funding, because it used to be that there would be a credit if we went over our utility bill mm-hmm. as a district. And then all of a sudden that was taken away. Well, that impacts districts beyond what you can imagine, because now it's taken from another part of capital, you know, to make up for that. And, you know, it's interesting. I went to wash my hands in a student bathroom the other day. There was no water coming out of it because the sinks are broken. And there were 6 sinks there. And, like, I got a trickle out of one. And that doesn't seem like much, but that's a health issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just fascinating as you watch us put buckets under the areas of our roof that leaks during the rains and the monsoon, which then sets off the fire alarm system. You know, and then we have to evacuate in the middle of a rainstorm. So it's interesting that not a lot of businesses have to go and take out light bulbs and say, okay, you need to take out some of the refrigerators and you need to, you know, no microwaves because we'll short out some things. But that's what we do. And I think educators as a whole are saying, we can't operate this way. We can't serve students if we don't even have working facilities.
Okay, we will be back with Cindy Harrison and Beth Lewis, teachers, educators in our school system, and we will put a wrap on this in a moment in the Think Tank when we return.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with Beth Lewis and Cindy Harrison, educators involved with Red for Ed and other related movements. Beth, I want to ask you about something that I think Cindy mentioned, which is some of the difficulties in a negotiation like this is that the governor is not completely in a position to deliver on some of the promises, because he can say, well, particularly for next year and the year after, we'll do this and we'll do this. But what if that's his proposal? He takes it to the legislature and the legislature says no.
Right. And if Arizonans keep voting the way we have been, I think that could happen. The Red for Ed movement absolutely needs to focus on changing the balance of power. It's not about party. This is nonpartisan. This is about electing candidates who actually care about the future of public schools in Arizona and don't want to push through voucher programs and STOs and anything else that detracts from our public schools.
Sounds like you're saying you're not going to get what you need with the current legislator.
Yeah, I mean, if everything, right, if everything stayed exactly as it was and we retain the status quo with all state leadership, I think these promises are absolutely flawed and will never come to fruition.
Cindy?
I can only echo that. I know teachers at my school and in my district are very frustrated with the promises that have been broken year after year by our lawmakers. We have to do something different.
I'll make one observation about this is that the folks you're dealing with may not be naturally supporters of education, but right now I think they're terrified of you.
Well, that's nice, but election year promises are they only go so far.
Oh, they won't be afraid. Next January, they will no longer be afraid of you.
Yeah, I think we're just lacking a lot of courage here in Arizona. I think our state leaders are unwilling to do the right thing, which is to look for either a way to raise our state income. Our general fund is entirely too small for a state our size. Or to look at closing, you know, business tax exemptions and loopholes. I mean, they don't want to tick off their friends in business, but this is the future of our economy at stake. And our business officials and business leaders should absolutely be figuring out ways to help our legislature fund our schools.
You know, one of the difficulties with that, I'm sure you're familiar with, there's a requirement in the legislature that was passed by the people. I think people didn't think through the implications of this, but it was voted the people. In order to raise any tax, you have to get a 3/4 vote of the legislature. And that is almost inherently almost impossible to do. And I'm sure at the time it was passed, it seemed like a good idea because we're talking about revenues isolated from their consequences. So I think if you ask the average boy, oh, taxes are bad, I want lower taxes, but I also want teachers to get paid more. And the public wants things that are inconsistent with one another.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, I think it's fascinating. We talk about taxes being so bad, but when you look at rankings, if we don't have the property taxes and that sustainable funding, what we get is high dropout rate. We're ranked well for that. Teacher salaries, counselor ratios. So, you know, it is a balance. So we may be number 1, 2, or 3 for property taxes being so low. But with that comes all the negative rankings. So I think our voters need to decide what is it that they really want for Arizona.
What are you willing to pay for?
Right. We have corporations that are refusing to set up shop in Arizona because we don't have the highly educated workforce that they're looking for. I mean, our children are our future economy, and we're not investing in that future.
So how do you get from here to there?
Well, I'm hoping that our legislature will band together. Like you said, a supermajority, that's leadership. We need to have somebody who's willing to bring everybody together, consider this the crisis it is, and come up with some real solutions.
It's interesting the coalition that would require. It mm-hmm. would be Governor Brewer got on the ballot an initiative years ago, the sales tax increase. And it didn't pass the legislation to increase it, just to get it on the ballot. And that coalition looked like half of the Republicans and all of the Democrats. I mean, that's mm-hmm. if you're going to get 3/4, because there's probably 1/4 of the legislature are no taxes ever under any circumstances, took the pledge. And those group that's you know at least half of the Republicans in the legislature, and in terms of that pledge, there is a relationship to partisanship. The tax guy who makes you take the tax pledge, no new taxes anywhere. I'm sure you know it. Blanking on the name.
Right, but even so, I mean, we're looking at polls that show that 77% of Arizonans support raising taxes. And that's not even a specific type of tax. That's just any tax
target,
if it was
dedicated
to public
I think that's
education.
Just it. Yep. When you and I as a pollster, I've observed that over the years. When you target a tax to something that is considered a high public priority, you get mm-hmm. support. And over the 30 years that I've been here, the public here has regularly supported tax increases targeted in two particular areas. One is education and the other is transportation. As long as they have a sense, they know exactly where that money's going, and that is to a high priority purpose. Because if you just say more taxes, the reaction is no, unless you tie it to something that's a priority.
And I think that's the transparency that the voters want. And when you're talking about shuffling money from, you know, one pot to another and taking it maybe from developmental disabilities and, you know, kind of, funneling things in different directions, that's not what the voters are looking for. And I think you're absolutely right. When there's transparency and say, this is where your extra dollar or dime is going to go to, I think they're in favor. And you had asked a question earlier about what is it going to take? And I credit Save Our Schools and Arizona Educators United to kind of wake a sleeping giant in the last year. A lot of educators have said, you know, I've never been this engaged and this aware of what's going on in politics. That's not something I've paid attention to. And I'm out there talking to the community. I'm telling them what legislators are saying, what's going on. I think they're very well informed. And I think they're going to spend much of their summer and into next year letting people know what we need. I don't think it stops at any particular point in time. I think you know, they're going to fight for what they know is right for kids. And I think a lot of our parents are and community members are starting to really understand this is a complicated issue and we didn't get here in a day. It's been happening in Arizona for 20 years and we need some very well thought out plans and we need to hold our legislators accountable and ask the hard questions as they're campaigning this summer and into the fall.
The real cut, I think, is you said 20 years. I think it's more like 10 in the sense that the 2007-08, the economic downturn was the moment when education levels of funding were frozen and where even, for example, the increase that people voted wasn't fully funded. I was listening to Steve Yarbrough, the president of the Senate, who described the 2007-08 period as a, quote, outlier.
Well, it's been 10 years and we're still missing $1.2 billion from our public schools. So if that's an outlier, it's an outlier that's really had some long-lasting ramifications. And it's hurting kids. It's hurting class sizes. And it's horrific for the future of our state.
Cindy, you get the last word, 30 seconds.
And I would say no, it's been 20 years because my salary was frozen long before 2007 and had been on and off for 14 years. So I moved to a state that we were already ranked middle to low and we just hit bottom.
Okay, you get the final word. Thank you very much, Cindy Harrison, Beth Lewis. I'm sure this issue is not going to go away. It will be interesting to look and see what happens because you're leaving the schools in a few days, and summer vacation will be an interesting period to watch this all transpire. I'm sure the issue will be back in the think tank, KTAR. Thank you very much.